we inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
This is a battle of worldviews.
And we activate.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance. Perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is AFA at the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio Network. Glad to be with you today on the program. This is our Friday edition of AFA at The Core. And as we do each week, we will have the Chris Woodward in with us in the last segment of the show. Chris Woodward over at American Family News, one of our reporters. I would say one of our great reporters, but they're all great over at American Family News. Chris Woodward will be in with us last segment. Got going too fast there. It's Friday. Got a lot of energy. It's also my birthday, Mr. Rosa. It's my birthday, October 21st, and so we're going to have a good bonfire here at American Family Radio this good evening. Bonfire. We do it annual AFA bonfire. Sure. So good day to be alive and to serve the Lord. Chris Woodward, as I mentioned, will be in with us in a little while. But we'll also have another guest. We're going to have on Robert Spencer. He's senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy. That's Frank Gaffney's outfit over there at Center for Security Policy. We'll have Robert on to talk about the question, which he also wrote a book on, who lost Afghanistan? Who lost Afghanistan? So we'll talk with Robert about that. In the second segment, it'll be a very, very interesting topic, as always, with anybody at the Center for Security Policy. Well, moving into some of the topics for our show today, we are in Psalm chapter 44 this week, so we want to turn our attention to the scripture before we begin diving into the news of the day. And the reason we do this each week and each show is because our basis and our footing has to come from the Word of God. Our footing, our foundation, our standing has to come from the Word of God, because if it doesn't, we will quickly begin wandering astray. We will quickly lose our footing. We will lose our foundation and become just like those throughout history who have wandered astray and turned their back on the Lord. So we want to turn our attention to Scripture and allow God's Word to guide the way we think and the way we view the issues of the day. Psalm chapter 44, verse 1 through 3, David says, O God, we have heard with our ears, our fathers have told us what deeds you performed in their days, in the days of old. Verse 2, you with your own hand drove out the nations, but them you planted. You afflicted the peoples, but them you set free. Verse 3, for not by their own sword did they win the land, nor did their own arm save them, but your right hand and your arm and the light of your face, for you delighted in them. So David is quick to point out that victory is ultimately in the hand of the Lord and not in our control or not within our grasp, although we are called to be vessels for the Lord. Ultimate victory is not in our hands. It's in the hands of the Lord. So let's remember that as we go about our day each day here on this earth. Well, moving into some of the stories, you know, the climate agenda that the Democrats are pushing, that the globalists and the Marxists are pushing very heavily on, is really a very anti-God agenda. And you probably haven't viewed it that way, because I haven't always viewed it that way. But the more you look into it and the more comes out, it's clear that what they call climate change, what they call global warming, the entire climate agenda, it presents itself as a environmentalist movement, a earth-friendly movement. That's how it presents itself. And if anybody speaks up against it or raises any questions, well, you're anti-earth, if that's such a thing. You're anti-environmentalist, and you want to destroy God's planet. That's the way they frame people who dare to ask any questions about the climate agenda movement. Well, the reason I say it's actually anti-God, anti-earth, Scripture is because it number one, places humans as a sub layer or a secondary class beyond the agenda. So the agenda is number one, and then humans come in below that as far as significance, importance, and what drives the decision-making. And this is why population reduction is no problem for them. Well, for me, population reduction is unbiblical. So what about Genesis do we take from and say we need to reduce the number of people that God created on this planet? No, there's nothing from Scripture that can give you the basis to say we need to kill babies and we need to make sure that we're sterile. There's nothing about God's Word and His created order that gives the Christian, the believer, the human, the basis or the justification to reduce population via killing babies and via sterilization. Absolutely nothing. So it's unbiblical, all right? It's against the mandate to be fruitful and multiply. So that's number one. But number two is it neglects the proper use of God's resources. So the Lord created this earth. The Lord created fossil fuels. And God has used and allowed man to use fossil fuels for the advancement of society, for the betterment of human civilization for the past several hundred years. And all of a sudden, we think we got a better way? All of a sudden, we think that we're going to neglect God's creation and the resources He's given us and that we've got a better way. So that's the second part of it. And the reason I can say that is because the entire globalist or the global warming movement is rooted in a falsehood that fossil fuels are bad, all right? That's the whole narrative. Fossil fuels are bad for the environment, and that's completely not true. That's never been firmly established. And they write these papers, 1,000 scientists say that global warming is killing the planet. Well, no, absolutely not. You study up who the scientists are, they're all the Al Gore types. All right, they're all the Al Gore types, and it's groupthink. That's exactly what it is. So man-made global warming is not a thing. It's never been firmly proven in the public, and fossil fuels are good. All right, we need more fossil fuels. Fossil fuels are not bad. That is anti-science to say that fossil fuels are bad. Now, can people misuse the resources that God's given us? Absolutely, but you can do that with anything. All right, you can misuse and neglect to care for God's creation, but that doesn't mean that fossil fuels or any type of natural resources are bad for the planet. It's all about how we use it, all about how we steward it. Fossil fuels are needed. Well, we look at the landscape of this anti-God movement, and we've seen this with the gun manufacturers, but now Bobby sent over this story this past week where New Jersey, the state of New Jersey, is going after suing the fossil fuel industry, and specifically these are energy companies, oil companies, Exxon, Shell, and Chevron. These are the three that were sued by the state of New Jersey, and guess what they're suing them over? They're not suing them over an oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. They're not suing them over, you know, not following proper environmentalist procedures at their oil facilities or at the refineries. They're suing them over climate change. They're suing these companies over climate change, and this is the same tact that the anti-Second Amendment lobby and activists are doing, trying to sue the gun manufacturers. All right? They're trying to sue the gun manufacturers, except for the difference is with a mass shooting, there actually is something that occurred. Although it's wholly not the fault of the person who manufactured the firearm, that's like suing the vehicle manufacturer because somebody drove over a pedestrian with a vehicle. The manufacturer of the inanimate object is in no way responsible for the actions of the user. That's a fundamental fact, both legal and moral. But that's what they're trying to do against Exxon, Shell, and Chevron. And this is all backed by the Biden administration. And Biden comes out there and says, energy companies need to reduce oil prices. I'm not doing a very good impersonation of Biden, by the way. But Biden comes out and he says, "Well, we gotta lower oil prices. The energy companies they have a moral obligation to reduce prices at the pump." Meanwhile, Biden's doing everything possible to make it more expensive to produce energy. Quite literally, I went through a list the other day. There's over 100 actions that the Biden bureaucracy has taken in the last 2 years to make it more expensive and more regulatorily burdensome, if that's a word, regulatorily, to produce energy. So they're making it tougher to produce energy, making it more expensive to produce energy. And then on the other hand, they're saying you need to lower prices. You need to lower prices. Not to mention, they're not renewing any leases. They're not renewing any drilling leases. So there's a plethora of reasons that energy is more expensive now. And like 90 to 100% of it is man-made. Talk about man-made problems. Energy prices is a Biden-made problem, all right? From day one, they have had a war on American energy. And then you look over in Europe, they are really going through a tough time. In Europe, you've got companies that have been around for over a century, some of them 150 years, that are closing. They're closing their doors. They can't afford to operate in Europe because of inflation and astronomical energy prices. So you got legacy companies that have been around for over a century in Europe that are shutting their doors because they can't afford to operate in Europe because of the sky-high energy cost and because of inflation, all caused by the stimulus of the COVID pandemic. Moving on to one other thing I want to mention. I want to play clip two here real quick. This is CNN, one of the CNN political analysts, and she's admitting that Biden and his crew, they don't really want to talk about the issues that people are concerned about. Instead, they want to talk about the issues that they're concerned about. Clip two.
I think what the president was trying to do today is remind people, as he put it, you know, how they felt the day of the Dobbs decision. He was trying to make it front and center because we know that when it was front and center, there was a huge reaction to it. And he's also trying to change the subject. You know, he doesn't want this election to be about the things that people are so worried about, inflation and the economy. He wants to talk about the Dobbs decision. He wants to talk about Republicans as extremists, which that's what Democrats are saying. So he wants to kind of, you know, whoever defines the election is going to win the election. And so he's trying to define it away from himself and towards these other things, obviously.
That's exactly right. And that's why you have the FBI arresting up to 22 pro-life advocates in the past couple weeks. That's why you have the heavy push for the Department of Justice to go after Trump and to go after anybody who thinks like him. This is the move. Let's don't talk about the real issues. Let's talk about the issues that the Democrats think are important. And that's why I've gone over in recent days, and I did so on the election special last week or earlier this week, the top issues that voters care about. Well, the top issues that voters care about is inflation and the economy. That is the issue of the day. And then below that, you get into other issues. But inflation and the economy is the number one issue. And these buzzwords like save the democracy and a MAGA extremist, all these buzzwords that the Democrat operatives are using, voters actually don't care about them. The vast majority of voters of all stripes don't care and don't buy into the rhetoric of the Democrats. All right, they care about being able to pay their bills, being able to fill up their vehicle with gasoline at an affordable price, and being able to go to the grocery store. That's what Americans are mostly concerned about now. Republicans are hitting on that issue. They are hitting on that issue hard, and that's why they're looking very well in the polls. Democrats are not. They can't talk about it because they caused it, and they don't want to have to explain themselves. AFA at the Core, I'm Walker Wildman. We got a special guest coming up next segment. You don't want to miss it.
AFA at the Core podcasts are available at afr.net. Back to AFA at the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the Core here on American Family Radio Network. Glad to be with you this second segment of our special edition each Friday of the Core, where we have Chris Woodward in with us the last segment, and we typically like to have a special guest as well in the second segment. We do have on with us right now Robert Spencer. Robert is a senior fellow over at Center for Security Policy and author of the new book, Who Lost Afghanistan? Very fascinating topic that we've tried to cover here at times on the Core. Robert, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, happy to talk to you. Thank you.
Well, Robert, you know, it seems like yesterday the debacle in Afghanistan went down, but it's been several months now, and I think it's actually been almost a year. If not, it's been over a year. Tell us, what led you to write this book, Who Lost Afghanistan, and what's your angle here?
Well, I've been maintaining from the beginning, way back when we first got into Afghanistan, that the whole thing was being mishandled. And so when the withdrawal was so catastrophically botched by the Biden administration, I thought that there needed to be a record of how the Afghanistan misadventure was wrongly conceived, wrongly executed, and wrongly ended. And so I thought, well, I'll put that in a book.
Wow. So I'm glad you brought up the beginning, because the beginning's always important when you're trying to write the history of what happened. We went into Afghanistan, and I'm a young buck, so I don't remember all the nitty-gritty details. I wasn't heavily involved in politics at the time. But there was Afghanistan, I believe, before there was the war in Iraq. But tell us, what got us into Afghanistan in the first place?
Well, it was a direct result of 9/11 that the Taliban had trained the hijackers who took down the Twin Towers and attacked the Pentagon on 9/11. And so the Bush administration issued an ultimatum right after 9/11 to the Taliban government in Afghanistan saying, turn over Osama bin Laden to us. And the Taliban refused. And so we went in. It was just that simple. It just got complicated because we toppled the Taliban government, but then decided to stay and try to make it into a Western-style secular republic, and that's where the whole thing went wrong.
Robert, that therein lies, I believe, the root of the problem, and I know we can complicate this or go as deep as you want on this, but to me, where we went wrong is we went in there for an objective— and then we changed the objective halfway through or at the end of the first objective. To me, Robert, that's where things get muddy, and that's what kept us in there so long. Is my assessment right or wrong?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There was nothing said. As a matter of fact, George W. Bush explicitly rejected the idea of nation building when we got in. He made it very clear that we were not going in order to try to remake Afghanistan into Switzerland. But that's what we ended up trying to do. And that was foredoomed from the beginning, as I explain in the book, because Afghanistan simply has no democratic tradition, never has had a democratic tradition, and the vast majority of the people don't want democracy in Afghanistan. They don't appreciate it. They believe Islamic law is the only law that ought to be implemented in a society. And so the whole enterprise was foredoomed from the beginning.
Well, Robert, the war in Afghanistan, Biden, to his credit or to his defense, he did say multiple times throughout as being vice president under Obama, and he may have said this at some point being a U.S. senator, but he mentioned getting out of Afghanistan and not wanting to continue the war in Afghanistan. Now, you know, you can probably also find records of him supporting the war in Afghanistan, just like you can any politician. But nonetheless, I do find it interesting that Biden would have said that as a vice president and possibly as a senator, because it's not like Biden is anti-war. I mean, Biden's almost wanting to get us into World War III with Russia over Ukraine, and Russia did knock down two towers and kill over 3,000 people in New York City. Why would Biden rush us? Why would Biden get us out of Afghanistan in such a hastily manner. What was Biden's play? What was the Biden administration's play to get us out of Afghanistan and do so in a very sloppy manner?
Well, in the first place, you're right. The getting out was not the problem. We should have gotten out, as a matter of fact, years ago. And so the fact that we were still in was shameful in 2021. It wasn't that Biden got us out that was the problem. The problem that we had with the withdrawal was that Biden's military is so much of a leftist social experiment laboratory that they didn't plan to get us out in a reasonable and coherent manner. The Biden administration has so thoroughly politicized the military. Now, to be fair, this started really in the Obama administration, but now it's complete and obvious that the military is so woke, so leftist, that they spent all the summer of 2021 enforcing wokeness in the military instead of formulating a coherent plan to get us out of Afghanistan safely. And 13 Americans paid the price when ISIS struck at the airport. An untold number of people were left behind unnecessarily because the whole thing was not planned properly, not executed properly. And all this could have been prevented if the military, instead of spending its time trying to enforce a leftist political orthodoxy on the troops, had been doing what it should have been doing.
Let me ask you this, because clearly we were there too long. Clearly the objective changed probably multiple times. And I think if you polled the American public, the majority of the American public, probably the vast majority, would say we were there too long. We should not repeat this practice, if you will. But what is the role of war? I mean, traditionally, historically, and strategically for nations, what is the purpose of war? Because you've got two options here. You can go in, destroy your enemy, and tell them if the enemy comes back, you will destroy them again, and then you leave. Or you can stay in nation build and basically occupy the nation as long as you want. What's the strategic advantage to one or the other? What's a smart move for a nation when it comes to war?
Well, I think that your first scenario there is the one that makes the most sense. And what we should have done, destroyed the Taliban government, left the country, told them, you cause any more mischief, we'll be back. End of story. What we did instead was kind of a parody of what we did after World War II. In World War II, we defeated the Germans and the Japanese. And then, after the war was over and they had surrendered, we instituted the Marshall Plan to rebuild Germany and Japan. Great. The United States of America, the most generous country in the history of the world. That's something to be proud of. But in Afghanistan, we instituted the Marshall Plan before the enemy was defeated. And so our military was devoted to building roads and schools and hospitals instead of actually fighting and winning the war. And this was a complete, it's kind of the end point of what happened after World War II applied by people who don't understand the lessons there, that after World War II, we rebuilt Germany and Japan and made them into allies. But they forgot the essential step that they were defeated first. And the ideology that had fueled their militarism was discredited in both cases. In Afghanistan, none of that was done, and we're already starting to rebuild the country. It was never going to work.
Folks, we're listening, or we're speaking to Robert Spencer. He's a senior fellow over at Center for Security Policy, and he's author of the latest book, Who Lost Afghanistan, which we'll link to that book on our podcast page at AFR.net. Robert, I do want to switch the discussion a little bit, and this is typical for people who are interviewing people. They talk about something that they didn't even bring you on to talk about. But I do want to kind of shift to Ukraine, because I think there are some parallels and maybe something we can learn from the past when it comes to how to handle Ukraine. Right now, where the U.S. is financially and militarily with supplies and weapons supporting Ukraine, to this degree or to this point, it doesn't appear that NATO troops are anywhere on the ground in Ukraine actually fighting Russia. So that's the good news. But what's the end game here? Because Putin's clearly got a strong will. NATO and Ukraine and the U.S. are clearly digging in their heels. I mean, is there any viable off-ramp here that can prevent us from dragging this out another decade in Ukraine?
No, not right now. I certainly hope one develops, but the administration has actually prevented several negotiated settlements between Ukraine and Russia. It seems as if the Biden people want to make sure that there is not peace in Ukraine right now, because it doesn't serve their purposes. And so because of their self-serving agenda, we may end up in World War III.
Yeah, see, that's very concerning, and I know a lot of people share this view. But, you know, when this whole thing started, Robert, anybody who dared to speak out against war in Ukraine or speak out, you know, hey, let's look at this one more time before we go all in, let's think through this. Anybody who mentioned that, you know, they were called pro-Putin, you know, you must not care about people in Ukraine, and they pulled the whole guilt trip thing. But Robert, this thing in Ukraine seems to be spiraling out of control day after day. To your point, Biden administration doesn't display any desire to want to negotiate with Putin on any level. This is not good, and anybody who brings it up and brings up the issue of, hey, let's talk about this, let's think through this, let's have a plan here, they seem to get shouted down, Robert.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, of course, is the left's modus operandi for years now, that there's no discussion, no debate. It just appeals to emotionalism, demagoguery on a grand scale. You have to go along with their agenda, or you want to kill grandmother, whether it's grandmother in Kiev or grandmother who might get COVID or whatever. It's always the same playbook.
Yeah.
And it's the American people who suffer, because now, you know, with the economy in the tank, we have to pay for billions for Ukraine while the president of Ukraine is posing for Vogue photo shoots.
Yeah, and that's a good point, Robert. So the last question here that I have for you, and you may not have any information on this, but it's worth a shot. You know, when I look at what's going on in Ukraine and the billions we're funneling into it, we know they're historically and proven to be a very corrupt nation, Ukraine that is, even before this war. When I see hundreds of billions from the U.S. going into Ukraine, the first thing I think of is that we got some big Ponzi corrupt scheme going on in Ukraine, and this money's making its way into the back of American politicians and American bureaucrats. Have you seen any evidence of that, or what's your gut instinct of what's going on here?
I'll tell you one little bit. It's not so much evidence as a little bit of a marker, an indication, and that is that recently there was a big story about Iran supplying drones to Russia and Russia using the drones in Ukraine, and there were a lot of videos out on Twitter of Ukrainians, including the Ukrainian military, shooting at the drones. And some people pointed out, and I think quite rightly, why are they using rifles to shoot at the drones? What happened to the $30 billion we sent them? Don't they have more sophisticated and effective ways to deal with these drones? And I thought, well, yeah, unless that money didn't actually go to any military in Ukraine, but was some kind of money laundering operation. And there needs to be a full-scale investigation of this that provides transparency to the American people. There are a lot of allegations out there that this whole thing is just lining the pockets of leftist politicians in the U.S., and they show their contempt for the American people by not even being willing to address the allegations.
Yeah, you know, your marker there that you mentioned, you cited, is not on an island by itself. You know, we've covered stories of aid workers, aid leaders in Ukraine. There was actually an interview. It was either CNN or one of the mainstream, you know, Democrat media conglomerates. They did an interview where one of the key aid workers in Ukraine admitted in the interview that he hasn't seen any of the money that the U.S. is sending over, And then the Democrat-held media conglomerate ended up retracting that story and wouldn't give an explanation for it. And we've actually spoken to aid workers in Ukraine who said they haven't seen a penny of U.S. dollars, U.S. aid dollars over there. So very good point. And maybe the Republicans, should they assume control of the Senate and the House, will launch a full-scale, subpoena authorized investigation, and we get to the bottom of where on earth all this money is going in Ukraine. Hey, Robert, last word, and then we'll let you go.
Well, I certainly hope you're right about that. And in the meantime, the main lesson, I think, of the whole business in Afghanistan as well as in Ukraine is that there needs to be a massive change in the political culture in Washington, a sweeping out of a lot of these entrenched people who have been in power for decades. And let's hope we have that coming in 22 and 24.
Absolutely, Robert. Hey, thanks so much for coming on the Core. Appreciate your insight.
Thank you.
All right, Robert. That's Robert Spencer, senior fellow over at the Center for Security Policy. He wrote his latest book, Who Lost Afghanistan? That's Robert Spencer as the author. We'll link to that on our podcast page at AFR.net when you go to today's show, AFA at the Core, today's show, Friday, October 21. We'll link to that book. Interesting interview. All we need is a plan, folks. All we're asking from our leaders is a clear, articulate plan that is presented to the American public for consensus building. But no, can't do that. We can't tell the American public what's going on and where their billions of tax dollars are going. That's got to change in Washington, D.C. AFA at the Core. We'll have Chris Woodward next. Stay tuned.
AFA at the Core podcasts are available at AFR.net. Back to AFA at the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to the Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you on with us on the program. And we have a news service here. My grandfather, Don Wildman, started the ministry some 45 years ago. And throughout the course of the ministry, he determined that, look, we have to have a Christian news service. We can't always rely on the mainstream conglomerates. We got to have our own news service. So we do. It's called American Family News, and Chris Woodward is one of the reporters there. Chris, welcome to the Core.
Thank you very much.
All right, Chris. Well, we've got a lot going on. You said just in the last little while, things have developed pretty rapidly in the news cycle. What is maybe the leading headline that you guys have been focused on this week?
Yeah, for the past 12, 24 hours or so, we've done a lot of stories on the CDC committee vote to recommend that COVID-19 shots be added to the childhood immunization schedule. And the way this is being kind of covered is that basically now for your child to be able to go to a public school, the CDC recommends that child get a COVID-19 shot in addition to all the other shots that a kid has to get in order to go to a public school or be out in public, things like that. As you can imagine, a lot of people are very concerned about this, due in part to big questions and concerns these days about the safety and effectiveness of the COVID-19 shot. Is it even necessary for kids? Then you also get into the, well, you can't mandate this. Now, NBC News, in perhaps its defense of the CDC committee, they did report that the recommendation is not the same thing as a mandate, but
yes.
Liberty Counsel pointed out that somewhere in the neighborhood of about 12 states use the CDC's recommendations for their requirements for schools. So in a roundabout way, depending on where you live, this advisory committee's vote and the CDC's input on it as well, that could at some point be a mandate for you and yours, depending on where you live.
Yeah, that's a good point. So there's good news and there's bad news. The bad news is that, well, there's probably two bad news items here, then one good news. The bad news items, to your point, Chris, is that the CDC provides recommendations. Well, the continuation of bad news on that front is that, to your point, some states do basically adopt without question what the CDC recommends. It's probably built in their state statutes and through their health department. But other states develop their own shot recommendation or shot requirement schedule And they do factor in what the CDC says, but it's not hard and fast. They basically take it or leave it as far as the recommendation. So that'll vary per state. But this is very concerning, Chris, because the shots have been questionable from day one, quite literally. The research is very scarce on them. And some of these recent shot schedules that they've been releasing are these different variations. Haven't even been tested on humans. They've just tested them on a couple rats and then released them to the market. So very, very spotty work, very questionable work. And we're talking about people's health. You know, we're talking about people's health. The Florida Surgeon General, Chris, put out a report. The Florida Department of Health conducted their own report on these reports of myocarditis amongst young men. And of course, that can affect other people as well. But their focus on the study was amongst young men. I think 18 to 44 was the range there. But they basically came out and said, look, these shots drastically increase the likelihood of myocarditis and heart issues amongst young men amongst this age range. So they put that out. And I want to play a clip from an interview. So the Florida Surgeon General did Labadeau, I believe, if I'm pronouncing his last name right, something to that extent. He was on Tucker Carlson, Chris, talking about why Dr. Joseph Latipo is his name. He's Florida Surgeon General. He went on Tucker Carlson talking about why he is not going to mandate these shots in Florida and how there are adverse reactions. Let's listen to that clip.
So yes. I ask people sometimes who are still hemming and hawing about this, if this vaccine, if it had been known 2 years ago or so that this vaccine would increase cardiac deaths in young men by 84%, would they have approved it? The obvious answer is no, you would never give something to someone who was young and healthy and increase their risk of dying from sudden cardiac death by 84%. But people are often, their response is, well, you know, I don't know, COVID's pretty bad. Yes, COVID can be terrible, but we don't give people medications that kill them.
Mm. Wow. You know, I've tried to articulate, Chris, why these shots are not necessarily a good idea. And I've tried to do so, you know, with a little bit of fairness and you know, common sense approach and not try to come down too heavy or conspiratorial. But nonetheless, Chris, he's right. I mean, you can talk about how dangerous COVID could be for some people, but the reality is that there are some serious side effects that are coming to fruition or coming to light on these shots.
Yeah, and the fact that they're just now coming to light, I think, shows the absolute failure of the mainstream media in this country for the last 2 years. And you think, well, you know, of course you would say that. You work for the alternative media. This is your platform to speak about the other guys. Let me tell you why it shows the failure. This is and this is going to sound heartless, but I'm trying to make a point here. It's a really juicy story. It's something you know will generate headlines, get some clicks, sell newspapers, what have you, which last time I checked is what news outlets are still.
You're talking about the COVID mania?
Yes. So, like, you know, the questions and the concerns and kids dying and athletes dropping dead of a heart attack in the middle of a game, all these things should have been front page headlines or the top story on ABC News, CBS News, all these news outlets, right? And they were not. Instead, all we got was Dr. Fauci saying, get your shot.
Yes.
Get your shot. I do a terrible Fauci. I'm still working on that. But, and you know, and then you have to match with that, I think Free Beacon or Newsbusters did a piece on this way back, but it was basically a montage of all the various news segments that were sponsored by Pfizer.
Yes, that's exactly where I wanted to take this, Chris. Thank you for reading my mind. Yeah, dozens of these major media conglomerates and even some of the locals were running Pfizer ads. They were running Pfizer ads. Meanwhile, Pfizer's launching these scandalous shots around the nation and forcing them upon the American public via government mandate, which to me should be illegal, folks. This should absolutely be illegal. You can't produce a private sector product and then force consumers to buy the product. I mean, that's like the government telling us what kind of car we can drive, and the government's helping to make sure the car manufacturer gets the car made, and they bypass all the safety standards because the government's in bed with them. I mean, it's so scandalous. It's so ridiculous. And there are 100 different ways from Sunday to perform healthcare in America without having to go through these shenanigans.
Yeah.
Chris, well, this is the latest out of the CDC. There are some states that are pushing back on this, but this is very, very concerning. And, you know, Chris, what I'm just being honest with our listeners as I am each day. What I will not be surprised with is if the Democrats and the Faucis of the world try to blame this on Donald Trump.
Oh, sure.
Because this was the shots were produced under Donald Trump, Operation Warp Speed. If they're smart Democrat operatives, which we know they are, they will flip this on Donald Trump as he heads into 2024 and put the blame on his shoulders.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm curious as to see whether or not this pits DeSantis against Trump theoretically in a battle for the GOP nomination.
The topic of shots and
yes.
Who produced them. Yeah,
because Governor DeSantis this week said, quote, as long as I'm living and breathing, there will not be a COVID shot mandate for your kids. That's a parent's decision. And he got massive applause for that.
Hmm.
Donald Trump, meanwhile, pushed for the shots. And he advocated for people to get the shots early on after he was out of the White House. Sometimes people booed him at the rallies because,
yes.
You know, there's so much anti-Fauciism stuff going on there, and understandably so.
Sure.
So I'm curious as to see whether or not these two might go head-to-head over shots. But to your point, Donald Trump did push for this, but, you know, the word didn't get out that they were actually going to be coming out until like the day or two after the election.
Yeah, which was definitely political.
Right.
The FDA held that announcement.
And who had the most oversight as president with the shots out there? It was Joe Biden, not Donald Trump. So
yeah, as far as the rollout and everything.
Right.
Like that.
I would be surprised if Democratic media and people didn't throw the vaccine problems at him.
Yeah.
But I would imagine he's going to have a very good response.
Well, if Mr. Donald J. Trump, Mr. President 45, is listening or someone around him is listening, I will say one thing he's got to do is he's really got to distance himself from Fauci and distance himself from these terrible shots. I mean, I don't know how he does that. Yes, he was commander-in-chief when they were produced. Yes, he lobbied for the billions to go to Big Pharma. But at the end of the day, Donald Trump wasn't in the lab bypassing the safety standards at Pfizer or, some of these major Big Pharma companies. So, what? They're going to sue me now. Watch. This is what they do. They're going to sue.
We just lost YouTube. Yeah.
Walker Wildman sued for $100 billion because he said Pfizer's name on the airwaves. That's a whole other topic. The Alex Jones and the lawsuits over free speech is a very concerning issue. Mm-hmm. But back to my point, President Trump, he's going to have to figure out where he wants to go with this topic, because you can't go to these rallies and run for president in 2024 touting these terrible shots. I mean,
right.
It's just not going to work.
I think, you know, kind of looking back right now, Trump's problem was he just had the wrong people advising him. Maybe they had hidden agendas. The reason I say he had the wrong people advising him is, you know, he's a business guy. He comes from a family of people that build buildings, and some of them start businesses and they fail gloriously, and other things are still around and have done well for him and provided him generations of wealth and whatnot. So I think he kind of deferred to people. He made Mike Pence head of the task force early on because Indiana had a problem with a COVID type situation, so Mike Pence had kind of experience doing this.
Yeah,
a guy who's an architect and has casinos and gambling ventures is gonna, in most any case,
he's gonna
give it over to a medical guy,
which is not a bad attribute
no.
for sure. So anyway, we'll see how that pans out. What are some of the other, or what's another topic that you guys covered this week?
Well, it was funny. You talk about how the government, you know, forcing you to do this or that. One of the things the government expects us to do under penalty of law is pay taxes. What's unfortunate about this is that our government that we're forced to pay taxes to sometimes uses our tax dollars to fund things that we are not exactly thrilled about.
Duly noted.
Yesterday, the Pentagon announced it's going to start helping military personnel and their families with abortion expenses. If the military service member is in a state where abortion is now heavily restricted or outright banned, the Pentagon is going to give them money to travel somewhere where they can get that abortion done. And it's not the Pentagon. That's the thing that bothers me again. It's another failure of the news media. They always talk about how the Pentagon is spending this money. It's our money.
Yes, they act like it's their money. They
and you're not supposed to spend Pentagon's federal budget. Money on abortion.
Yes,
but they clearly. Are.
That's right. You know, these to show how out of touch these bureaucrats and the president's team is. They're announcing this widely unpopular stuff 3 weeks out from the midterms, Chris. I mean, they are not even politically studious enough to know, hey, let's wait on our crazy ideas until after the midterms. I mean, this is not popular. Telling taxpayers that we're going to pay to have babies killed with the Pentagon budget and our tax dollars is not a winning midterm campaign slogan, our main midterm campaign strategy. And then today, Chris, I saw the story where the Congress is wanting to do another $50 billion to Ukraine. Mm-hmm. No, not $50 million, not 50,000. They want to do $50 billion more to the Ponzi scheme in Ukraine.
Yeah, I saw one guy on Twitter. He said, you know, people who think we should send more money to Ukraine should send their personal money first.
Yes. Yeah, Biden and all of his China money that he and Hunter made, they can send that over to China.
Yeah.
Obama can sell his Martha's Vineyard estate that's going to flood in 10 years, according to AOC, and they can send that money over to Ukraine. I'm all for it. All the billionaires, all the hedge fund managers, they can send their money over to Ukraine. We can let Raytheon and all the big military industrial complex, they've got plenty of money in the bank. They can donate these weapons over to Ukraine. And go for it there. But, you know, they won't do that, Chris. They're not going to miss out on a payday.
Well, and the irony here with the Pentagon, kind of circling this back to a topic that we began the segment talking about, the Pentagon is doing this under the thinking that government should not tell a woman what to do with her body. But the same Pentagon and the same government will tell that female service member, you have to get a COVID shot or yes. You're not going to be in the military.
Yes. Exactly.
Which is government intervention with her body.
Completely hypocritical.
It is.
Completely hypocritical. Well, Chris, we got midterms in under 3 weeks from now. The reporting out there is the Republicans got some momentum, but, you know, I'm wondering if the Democrats got any shenanigans up their sleeve. I guess we'll find out.
You know, there is a lot of time left for them to figure something out, right? 2 weeks from Tuesday is Election Day. Certainly we'll be working all day on AFN. To provide coverage. AFR will have election specials as well. One thing to watch, independent women. There was a poll out this week that found independent women are flocking to the GOP in the final days before midterms. That, I think, shows they do not care about Biden's abortion push. It's the economy, stupid. We should vote that way.
Absolutely. They're filling up their Suburbans in urban and metropolitan America for $150. Unless you're in California, it's $200.
Gas has always been $7 in California.
Always, Chris. Going back long, long time. Hey, AFA at the Core, thanks for joining us, Chris.
Thank you.
Folks, we'll be back next week. Make sure you tune in.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.